This is Lauren Suzuki for KMIH 889 The Bridge. Journalists are some of the most powerful people. They determine the perception of events and the public's reaction. It takes a skilled storyteller to write on often divisive issues of social justice, such as Naomi Ishisaka. Naomi Ishisaka is the social justice columnist and assistant managing editor for diversity and inclusion for the Seattle Times. I was able to sit down with this changemaker and ask her some questions.
To get started, how did you get into journalism and specifically the social justice columns that you do in the Seattle Times?
Yeah, well, it's funny because I actually got into it when I was in high school at Garfield High School in Seattle. I didn't know any journalists. I didn't know anything about journalism, but I was super shy as a high school student, like super shy. I was very quiet, didn't say much in school. But my writing was very loud, and my language arts teacher read my work and appreciated, you know, how strongly I felt about the things that I was writing, and encouraged me to be part of the high school newspaper, at Garfield, The Messenger. And, you know, that was not something I'd ever thought of before because I didn't know anything about it. And so I think, like many young people, because of the encouragement of my teacher, I applied to be part of the newspaper staff and became part of the newspaper staff. And then I became one of the editors of the newspaper. And then everything just kind of, you know, continued on from there. I was part of a high school journalism program at the time, sponsored by the Seattle Times and the University of Washington, that trained students of color and how to go into journalism and how to, you know, learn the tools of the trade. And that was really helpful for me to kind of understand, like, both, you know, both the technical aspects of journalism, but also getting to meet all these journalists of color, most of whom worked at the Seattle Times. And I was able to kind of see for myself, like, these are regular people, you know, they, you know, are super talented and do these amazing things. But at the end of the day, like, they're people I could see myself being. And, you know, I grew up in a family that was very much interested and focused on social justice. My dad taught social work for about 30 years at the University of Washington, with a focus on how communities of color in particular experienced mental health, mental illness. And so I was very much, you know, kind of grew up in this world of thinking about social justice and racial justice and how those all intersect. And even though, you know, we didn't know any journalists in our family or anything like that, I could see how journalism could be kind of another way of approaching the same things that my family cared about so much. Raising awareness about issues, helping people understand how marginalized communities experienced and felt about things. So, you know, that's really kind of how it all started. And then, you know, went on to work on my college paper as well, and then got a number of different jobs in journalism. But, you know, it was really that early experience in high school that set me on this course. So for all of your, you know, listeners, of this story, you know, I think the things that you're doing now make such a big difference to your future, even though it seems like, oh, this is just high school. But, you know, sometimes those experiences can really set us on a trajectory that changes our life.
For sure. And you talked about having all the support in the program for journalists of color and your parent or your dad working in kind of a similar field. But even if that support existed, I think there's still definitely nuances of being a Japanese American person and a woman in journalism. And have you experienced any discrimination or barriers with that? And how has that those experiences impacted how you tell a story?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think for me, like I pretty much took advantage of every opportunity I had when I was first starting out to really surround myself with journalists of color, professional journalists of color, but also other students of color who were interested in journalism. So I was able to not feel like I was alone in that work. And it really helped give me some role models that I could take to whatever job I had. But, you know, definitely, particularly in my role now as the social justice columnist at the Seattle Times, I do get a lot of racist and sexist and homophobic attacks from readers, particularly when I write about race or social justice, which is pretty much all the time. And I think, you know, I think you just have to kind of learn how I've had to learn how to really think about, you know, what is the criticism? What is the feedback that I'm getting that could be constructive and useful and is being delivered in good faith, and people are actually wanting to have a dialogue and engage on the things that I'm writing about? And then what are the criticisms and feedback that are just trying to be cruel or hurtful or, you know, attacking? And I've really learned how to kind of separate the two and not let the ones that are not being done in good faith affect me too much, right? Because otherwise you can just become paralyzed by all the negative feedback and paralyzed by all the things that you're hearing, and that can really overshadow what it is that you're trying to do and say. And that hasn't been easy. And I've written in the past about how women and women of color in particular who pursue journalism face a much higher number of attacks based on their gender and racial background than other folks do. And it's causing women and people of color to leave journalism. And that's just a terrible thing. And there's more ways than ever for that kind of message to come. And I think that it can sometimes feel like, you know, just a fire hose of feedback coming on every single channel. And it can be really overwhelming. So I think you have to be really careful and thoughtful and have a practice around how you filter that kind of feedback and make sure it doesn't kind of overwhelm you to the point where you can't do your work anymore. And it takes a while to get there, but I think it's really important.
That's a really good way to think about it. And so kind of moving on to the next topic, my dad and I often talk about race and how it's involved with society's attitudes towards it and kind of the difference between, you know, our experiences. You know, I'm a quarter Japanese in Seattle, and my dad was half Japanese growing up in rural Minnesota. And how my dad thinks, he says, so it's cool to be Japanese now, is what he says. Have you seen kind of this kind of like this change in attitude towards race? Do you think it's cool to be Japanese now? And if there is that attitude change, do you think that's affected the way you write?
Yeah, I mean, I wrote a column recently about the backlash to racial justice. And, you know, I think there was a period in the last few years where there was a heightened awareness and consciousness around racism and racial inequality that was kicked off by the murder of George Floyd and all the protests that happened after that. But we're really seeing the pendulum swing the other way now. And I think we're in a period where a lot of the things that we had kind of come to accept as, well, I think some folks had come to accept as moving our society forward, such as, you know, making sure that there was more equitable representation of women in different male-dominated fields, that there was more racial equity when it comes to homeownership and other arenas where people of color have been historically marginalized from. Now there's this whole other movement that's coming back to say, actually, those things are wrong. Actually, we don't want to remedy those past injustices. And to remedy them now would be an injustice in and of itself, right? So there's this whole new sort of narrative that's taken hold, and it's making it so that, you know, you can't be a public institution in Florida and talk about DEI anymore. Those offices are being disbanded, and there's, you know, schools that are making it less possible to learn about racial injustice and our history, our actual true history of this multicultural country, right? So, you know, I think like anything, it's often one step forward, two steps back. And I think we're kind of in the two steps back phase of that. And I think that, you know, there will be a reaction to that reaction, right? Like that's how these kind of changes happen. But I think that we're in a position right now where a lot of the things that I think we might have taken for granted as things that people understood were positive changes, we're now in a place where those are no longer seen as positive.
That's a good point. That's very, very interesting to think about and kind of, look back with all that. I saw that you do both photography as well as your writing. And I plan to major in film and media studies. And there's always this talk about how film is kind of the best way to tell a story because, you have the narrative and you have the visuals. But since you do both, if you had to choose one, which would you do? And also, do you think there's one, like, regardless of your personal taste, which one do you think sparks a better reflection in viewers?
Yeah, I mean, at the risk of copping out on this question, I mean, I think they have different roles to play, right? I think photography and video is so powerful in telling a story, right? Our photojournalists at the Seattle Times, our video journalists at the Seattle Times do an extraordinary job of bringing you deeper into a story. You might read about a person on paper, but then when they do a video about that person or do portraits of that person, it just gives you such a richer understanding of who that person is and what their life is like and who they are and what motivates them, what moves them. It's like, really getting at the heart of a story, really getting at the heart of a person. And that's so powerful and so incredible. But I also think that it's the storytelling as well. Like when you pair that with a deeply researched and reported story, and our journalists do such an extraordinary job of that, that becomes the, an added level of richness and substance I think you need them both, right? They both work together to tell a really important story. And I love both. I'm one of those weird people who like is just as passionate about one or the other. And ideally they're working in sync together, right? Words, visuals, they're all working together to make the reader care about what you're writing about and care about the people that you're writing about. And I guess the best of both worlds is to do both really well,
Mm-hmm. Which I think you do.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, I'm nowhere near my photojournalist colleagues in terms of photojournalism, but I definitely love the camera and I love taking pictures of, in particular, communities of color who often don't get represented in the way that I see them, in the way that I experience our communities as this rich, beautiful, complicated, joyful group of people, right? Like there's so many stories to tell that I think having that eye really matters.
For sure. And just to close out here, you're an incredible writer. You've spent many years at the Seattle Times. And so with that, do you have a formula of how you tell your stories in a respectful and really thoughtful way? And do you have any advice to those who want to spark change in their communities as you have through storytelling?
Yeah, I mean, my advice is, I think the same advice I would give for any person in any position. Like, first and foremost, this work is about people, right? It's about people. And in my case, it's about marginalized people. And so, when you approach a person who may have not had a good relationship with the media in the past, or their community has not been represented in the media in a way that is respectful, you have to take extra care to really listen, to really be accurate, to really make sure that what you are documenting and representing is as true as possible to that person's life and experience. It's just like anything. Like if you approach it with respect and care, you're going to get a much better outcome. And, we live in a world where it's all about, instant gratification. It's all about, these quick hits and like trying to get people to click on your things and like your things. And this kind of work really takes the time of taking a beat and really thinking through, like, what is the impact of how I present this? Is it going to be causing more harm to people who have already been harmed in the past? Or is it going to, shine a light into corners that people might not have been able to see before, right? If you do it right, if you do it with a lot of care, then I think the impactful stories will follow, But if you are just trying to rush something through and trying to, get it out there to get sensational, attention or something like that, then that's when you start to lose that respect for the people that you're writing about and potentially, you know, do more harm than you're doing good.
That's really interesting. I'll keep that in mind. But that's all the questions I have. Thank you so much for meeting with me. It's been really great to talk to you.
Thank you. You too.